Monday Memo, a program of interest for the entire community concerning people and events on the campus of Concordia Seminary. Your hostess is the seminary's Director of Publicity, Gladys Ulblow.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gladys Silfo, welcoming you to our regular feature the first Monday of every month, Monday Memos from Concordia Seminary. Our program today is going to be somewhat different from the usual ones, in that we will have as our guest not someone from our own seminary, but from our Seminary of the Wisconsin Synod. As some of you may know, each year around the time of the Reformation Festival, like right about now, we conduct the Wreath Lecture on our campus. The overall thrust of this funded lectureship deals with the cardinal principles of Lutheranism. This year, we combined that lectureship with another historic event, one that probably many of you are not really aware of, the 450th anniversary of the Apology of the Augsburg Confession. And we invited as speaker Professor Edward C. Frederick, professor at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, located in Mequon, Wisconsin. Mequon, by the way, is a suburb of Milwaukee. Professor Frederick is very well qualified for this task, as you will discover in just a short time. Welcome, Professor Frederick. In glancing through your biography, I noticed that you have been a professor of church history at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary since 1971, and you are chairman of the department. Before that, you taught at various Lutheran colleges. Can you tell us something about that?
My professional work began as an instructor at a high school in Fond du Lac named the Winnebago Lutheran Academy. I taught there for 3 years and then served another 4 years as principal of the academy. Mm-hmm. Then I finally had the chance to serve the pastorate. This was in Detroit, Michigan, and those were the years from 48 to 54. After that, I got back into teaching mostly languages at our Wisconsin Synod Prep School in Saginaw, Michigan, Michigan Lutheran Seminary. I worked there for 10 years, and then we moved to New Ulm, Minnesota, where I taught 6 years at Dr. Martin Luther College, the Teachers College of the Wisconsin Synod, and then in 71 made the move to Mequon.
So it appears that with the exception of a few years when you had a parish in Detroit, you spent the larger part of your ministry in the classroom. Is that right?
Yes, not necessarily to my liking. I'm often asked that question. Do you prefer teaching? I guess it's just been calls that have come and places I felt I should go to.
Right, uh-huh. In addition to teaching in the classroom at the present time, you also do considerable writing and editing. Is that not correct?
Yes, I have the responsibility of editing the theological publication of our synod, the Wisconsin Lutheran Quarterly, and of course writing for it, as do all of our people at the seminary. I am also a contributing editor of our Northwestern Lutheran, the paper especially for the laity, much in the class of the Lutheran Witness.
I see. It's the official organ of your church body. Uh-huh. The Wisconsin Lutheran Quarterly, how old a publication is that? That has a pretty long history, doesn't it?
Yes, the quarterly began in 1904.
Oh, my. That's...
It's one, probably one of the older continuing publications. Mm-hmm. All church periodicals and publications are having financial difficulties. We probably couldn't survive except for a very generous subsidy from our synodical body.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Well, in addition to being in the classroom and writing and editing, you've also given many lectures and essays. I know that you have given such essays for the Synodical Conference, for instance, the Lutheran Historical Conference, the Wisconsin Synod Convention, and many others. Well, now that we know a little bit about you, except I'd like to backtrack just a little. You did your pre-seminary work at Northwestern College, is that correct, in Watertown?
Right. Uh-huh.
And then you graduated from the Mequon Seminary.
That is correct.
And you did some postgraduate work. Now, where was that?
That was in connection with the assignment at Saginaw, Michigan. I did some history study at East Lansing, Michigan State University, getting an Emmy in history.
Right, uh-huh. Okay. Well, now how about telling us something about your seminary? Is this the only seminary owned by the Wisconsin Synod, or are there others?
No, this is the only theological seminary. In sketching out my career, I mentioned Michigan Lutheran Seminary. That's a name that could deceive people that aren't in the know. Way back when, in the late 1800s, that school was a full-fledged pre-college, college, seminary school. Mm-hmm. But then when the Michigan Synod joined our Wisconsin Synod, that school became a prep school only. But for historic reasons, retained the name Michigan Lutheran Seminary.
I see. Uh-huh. How many students do you have, and how many faculty members?
At Mequon, we have about 60 students in each of the four classes. That number hasn't really varied much for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And for those students, 180 of them studying on campus, we have a staff of 16 professors.
I see. Uh-huh. Is your program basically the same as ours? In other words, divided into four departments or areas, systematic, exegetical, historical, and practical?
Yes, that is correct. They're probably not four equal divisions. Probably would be putting in more time in the exegetical division, but we try to do the work that has to be done in all of those or field.
Mm-hmm. And what about the number of years that your students spend in preparing for the ministry? Do you and we differ on that score?
I don't think so. Our students at Mequon come to us as college graduates, so that's behind them, and then they have a four-year program after that. Three of those years are spent on the campus.
And 1 year of vicarage?
Between their second last and last year, they do field work for a year to get them ready for the full-time job.
Right, and they're usually sent to any part of the country for that, or
not? Yes, vicars could. Last year, one went up to Alaska. Our son went to Florida. However, probably the bulk of them would be found in our three main states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota.
I see. Uh-huh. What about married students? What percentage of your students are married?
If I can recall that figure correctly, it's something a little less than half the students are married.
Mm-hmm. And is there married student housing on your campus?
No, there isn't. rather interesting. Some years ago, we polled students on whether there was any need for that. This was maybe 6 years ago, and there was very little interest shown in such a such a project. I'm sure that if we took that poll now, the students would be unanimously in favor of some cheap campus housing.
I would think so, yeah. What about your campus? I know it's high up on a hill and it's very beautiful. How many acres does it comprise?
Our campus was bought by the church body as an 80-acre farm in the late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And all that property has been retained since then.
I see. So it's about the same size as ours. We have 72 acres. Yours is a little larger.
That would probably come close. You know, when you say 80 acres, that might mean anything from 75 up.
Right. And I think yours was dedicated in 1929, and ours in 26, the present campus, that is.
Right.
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, we have a lot of similarities there. Do all your faculty members live on the campus?
Yes, we have very fine housing there on that big area. We can afford to spread out the houses with big yards and lots, and housing is provided for all 16 men and a business manager. There are 17 living houses on campus.
Well, I find these comparisons most interesting, and I'm sure we could go on and on. But we'd like to talk to you also today about the subject which you addressed on our campus last Wednesday, and hope that you will give us some good insights on a topic which is seldom addressed, namely the apology of the Augsburg Confession. My first question to you is just exactly what is the apology of the Augsburg Confession and who wrote it? It sounds to me as though someone put out the Augsburg Confession and then later on somebody else apologized for it, but that can't be right.
First of all, the apology is used in the sense of defense. And this goes back, of course, to the writing time of both of the confessions. This is in 1530. When the Lutherans got their first chance to publicly declare themselves before the emperor and his diet at Augsburg. The Augsburg Confession is a short, concise, complete statement of the basic beliefs that the Reformation adherents held. It was presented to the emperor and the diet on June 25th, 1530. And I think the Lutherans were happy the chance to give that confession and would have been very happy to stand by it. Then, however, the other party at the Diet, the Roman party, brought into the Diet, instead of their own positive confession, an attack on the Augsburg Confession, at least those parts where they disagreed.
Mm-hmm.
There were naturally points of agreement also. That being the case, the Reformation adherents deemed it best to reply to that attack on the Augsburg Confession with a defense of it, this apology of the Augsburg Confession.
I see.
Both documents were written chiefly by Philip Melanchthon, Luther's right-hand man. The absence of Luther at that diet may surprise people. Luther was very close at the Coburg. He was left there because some of you will know from 1521 and the diet at Worms, Luther was declared heretic and outlawed. And it simply would not have been possible, wouldn't have been good form to bring this condemned heretic before the emperor. The emperor would just not have taken kindly to that.
Yeah.
So Luther could not appear, and this is why these two major confessions of the Lutheran Church are really the work of Philip Melanchthon.
Mm-hmm.
Although in drawing up the Augsburg Confession, he had confessions that Luther had worked on available, and he had a lot of advice from Luther, too, who was close by and was able to advise Melanchthon by letter frequently.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I have gotten a good description of what the apology is. How long a document is it, at least in relation to the Augsburg Confession?
The Augsburg Confession would make a fair-sized pamphlet. But then its defense and explanation in the apology is about seven times that long.
Ooh.
So a fair-sized book in itself, a smaller book in itself.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, I'm not sure that I'm correct or not, but don't we spend more time in the classroom, usually, on the Augsburg Confession than on the apology? Or is that
yes,
not correct?
Oh, uh-huh. That is correct. For several reasons, the Augsburg Confession states the doctrines either in distilled form or embryonic form. The apology amplifies them, spells them out, shows the proofs and the argumentation used in deriving at the statement. The Augsburg Confession is the well-known confession. It's the kind of confession that anyone can read and understand without difficulty. And this is the one that just has to be the better known of the two.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the apology. Mm-hmm. The length is a factor, and the argumentation is more involved, is more technical.
I see. Uh-huh. What would you say is the essential theology of the apology? I imagine it's hard to sum it up, but...
Not all that hard. If you start from this, that the Augsburg Confession provided the basic beliefs of the Reformation adherents, and then know that this Augsburg Confession, part of it at least, came under attack, you will see that the issue will be the basic cleavage between Rome and between Wittenberg and Luther and people who were minded to push the Reformation forward. That basic issue, of course, is that question: how is the sinner justified before God? And where one side would answer, the justification process certainly has to have the help of God. It must be completed by the sinner. The Reformation principle was that justification is by grace alone, by faith alone. That is the cardinal issue.
Mm-hmm.
From that issue, other doctrines are viewed. The fairly large-sized apology devotes one-third of its space to this doctrine of justification.
Is that right? Uh-huh. In other words, the heart and core of our...
That is the basic
problem.
Yeah,
I see. Uh-huh. Now, this may sound like a queer question, but would you say that the study of the apology is primarily for the clergy, or can laity also understand it?
Certainly there are passages where a person without a knowledge of the technical terms used in the debates might have some trouble and might get bogged down. But I think that any lay person reading, for instance, article on justification, on the one of love and the fulfilling of the law, would find this very edifying and would enjoy reading that very memoir.
Well, that's interesting to know. How did the apology become one of our confessional, documents? It is, isn't it?
I mean, yes, it is.
Yeah.
And all our pastors would subscribe to it as a faithful reproduction of the teachings of the Scriptures. Perhaps the highest compliment paid the apology is the fact that it gained this status without any compulsion, without any coercion, without any formal meetings. The document simply appeared. The Reformation adherents liked it very much. They accepted it as their document. They did that on an individual basis. They did that on a group basis already 1 year after the apology was published at Schweinfurti. The Reformation people made it their confession, despite the fact that the Romans tried to contest this. They stuck by that. And then at very formal meetings, such as the small call meeting in 1537, a year earlier, the Wittenberg meeting, people simply at those meetings said, this is our confession.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing, of course, ends up when the formula conquered writers state their basis and mention there among the ecumenical creeds, and the Augsburg Confession mention also the apology to the Augsburg Confession as a confessional document of the Lutheran Church.
I see. I see that our time is fast slipping away from us, but in the remaining brief time, could you kind of sum up by telling us what the significance is of the apology for Lutheranism today? Well, what does it mean to me in 1981?
Well, it means everything to each one of us, since the chief point in the apology has to do with the justification of the sinner before God. And that's a significant matter, whether it's 1531 or 1981 or all the years in between and all the years to come.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem that confronts all of us.
Mm-hmm.
As far as church bodies and relations between church bodies are concerned, the apology is very important for the Lutheran Church, just because, again, of that the doctrine especially treated there.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the doctrine by which the church stands or falls. That's true of the individual believer, it's true of the church. And therefore, in this time when there is much talk of bringing churches together to have them conduct dialogues on their doctrinal position, it would be very important for Lutherans in such situations to place great emphasis on the apology.
Mm-hmm.
And not, in other words, slight this strong basis for the major doctrine in our theology.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you've done, and done very effectively, Professor Frederick, is you've whetted the appetites of many of us to really get into the apology, and I suppose with it at least part of the Augsburg Confession, to see what it really does say and what it says to us today. So we thank you sincerely for being a guest on our campus, as well as for taking time out today in this radio interview to tell us about the apology and to share with us a few comparisons about your seminary. Thank you so much.
I like to talk about both subjects. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
been listening to Monday Memo from Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, with hostess Gladys Sulflo. This program is brought to you the first Monday of every month at 12:05.